I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, this is the fifth DesignFootball.com podcast, and today we'll be focusing on kit sponsorship. I'm Jay, I occasionally write blogs on DesignFootball.com, and I'm joined by football kit commentator and illustrator, John Devlin. Hi, John.
Hello, Jay. I'm good, thank you. Yeah, and yourself?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Excellent.
Thanks for asking. Okay, so kit sponsorship. Around this time, I don't know, I think it was a few days ago, it was the 40th anniversary of Kettering Tyres, the Kettering Tyres logo, or Kettering Tyres wording, appearing on the Kettering Town shirt. So I was wondering, what was the first instance of kit sponsorship having an impact on your life? I take it you were probably too young to remember either. Certainly Kettering having Kettering Tyres, or Liverpool having Hitachi, would that be right?
No, unfortunately, Jay, you're wrong. I remember don't remember the Kettering one, because of course, being non-league, probably wouldn't, you know, as a young boy, it wouldn't have been on my radar. But the Liverpool thing was a big, big deal. And in many respects, I think my love of football kits had started just probably prior to that, in about 77, 78. And of course, when Hitachi came along, It just kind of rubber stamped it. I was just obsessed with the idea of this word appearing on clothing. Because not like today where you see Superdry on every other shirt you see in town. You know, back then, words just didn't appear on clothes. It was like, you know, two different things. So as a young lad, I mean, it really confirmed my obsession with kits way back then.
Yeah, so I had a little bit of a look into this. And we always think about Kettering Town, or historically speaking, we look at it as the first instance of football kit sponsorship, but it had actually been going on in other countries. So in Germany, a team called Eintracht Braunschweig or something like that, or Braunschweig, something like that, had the Jägermeister logo on their shirts because they were told they weren't allowed to have the Jägermeister wording on the shirt, because for the same similar reasons to the FA actually banning Kettering Town from having Kettering Tyres on the front of their shirts. So it's something that's close to my heart, because I was actually born in Kettering. And the idea of Kettering being forward-thinking in any way is bizarre. Believe me, as someone who goes there and thinks that they've taken a step sort of 30, maybe even 40 years into the past.
Fantastic.
By entering the town limits. Yeah, their idea that they were pioneers in some ways is absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
But it had been going on in Germany. Bayern actually started wearing the Adidas logo very big on their shirts as well, to follow that trend, which seems strange now, because to have a manufacturer's logo so big, and Hibernian in Scotland as well had Buchter.
Of course,
but,
yeah.
It was a massive big deal at the end of the 70s. I can't imagine what it must have been like to have all shirts with nothing on them, and then suddenly to have shirts with something on them.
Well, I was going to say, what was interesting as well is that at the time, of course, there wasn't the you know, the obsession with kit. People never talked about football shirts. It was almost irrelevant. And so you'd see Hitachi on the Liverpool shirts, but there was never anything about it. You know, in the magazines that I read, Shoot or whatever it was at the time, it was almost like, ignore it. Don't talk about it. It's the white elephant in the room. It was so obscene and so vulgar, I think, to have that the press didn't really jump on it at the time. That's just my memory of it. I may be wrong, of course, but
yeah, it provokes a lot of feelings. It certainly does now. I think maybe that might have been a deliberate approach to actually, if we don't talk about it, it might go away.
Yeah, that's right. Ignore it and it'll go away. Exactly, yeah.
And for one of the biggest teams to do it as well. So you've got two ends of the scale. You've got Ketchum Town, who are a non-league team, suddenly putting a sponsor on the shirt. And then Liverpool, one of the biggest teams in the world, sort of around, was it before they had won the European Cup? I probably should know this, but no, I think they'd already won the European Cup at least once, hadn't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the Hitachi deal was about 79. And just doing a little bit of research on this earlier, apparently, according to Wikipedia, which of course we can't always trust, it says shirt sponsorship was eventually permitted in England in 77. Now, I don't think that's right, because I can't believe it would have taken 2 years for a team to pounce on this opportunity. But of course, there is a little bit of bad feeling, because everyone says Liverpool, you know, the first team to have sponsorship. And of course, it's not actually true. It's Kettering really hold that honour, but it almost felt like Liverpool's power as being one of the biggest club in the land at the time were able to push the FA to allow it, whereas Kettering were tiny non-league, and the FA just walked all over them. So there is sort of controversy around that as well, I think.
Yeah, I think. It is okay. As I say, having been to Kettering, it is okay to consign them to the dustbin of history. So I'm not really bothered about that. The one thing that's just dawned on me, Kevin Keegan, did he carry on wearing Itachi or he didn't? When he went to Hamburg from Liverpool,
they did.
Weren't they So he had consecutive years of wearing Hitachi for two different clubs. That's as good as Eric Cantona winning the league title with two different teams in consecutive seasons.
I hate the
same sponsor.
But Jay, I hate to crush your enthusiasm here. But of course, Keegan left in 77 and Hitachi
before they got the sponsor.
Yeah. So in fact, it was almost, there is a definite connection, but Liverpool didn't start wearing it until 79. So yeah, but there is, it's funny again how the two teams are linked through sponsorship.
Well, I've just found also on Wikipedia that Kevin Keegan had it put in his contract that he wanted, what the only thing he was going to miss out on by leaving Liverpool was having Hitachi on the front of his shirt. So Hamburg set up a deal with Hitachi to finalise the deal. That's not true. But I would love it if it was true.
Do you know what? We're going to have to revisit this. I'm going to look into this and get this nailed, because it seems that's not, the dates aren't adding up there, are they? How strange.
For whatever reason, Kevin Keegan still wore Hitachi on his shirt despite leaving Liverpool, which is crazy. I mean, well done to him. So, through history, there's been a lot of interesting football shirt sponsors. If you go to the Football Attic website, they actually had a competition. Oh, sorry, it was a vote. It was just a fun vote thing, which was a knockout tournament, I think, where people voted on their best, I think it was British, sponsors. So the most iconic sponsors are the ones that look best, or the ones that were funniest, I suppose, in the end. And it was won by Oxford United wearing Wang, which is an American computer company, I think. You illustrated all these, John. Was that a fun thing to do?
Yeah. Well, it was. I mean, I remember, somebody sort of raised a smirk at the time as well. So it is... Yes, it is always quite amusing seeing that. But and of course, Brighton, wasn't it, with the Nobo or Nobo? Their big sponsorship. I think that probably came a close second, I would have thought.
I think it came up on top. I remember being very, very pro Crown Paints actually winning that, and getting quite argue with people and sending out tweets to fellow Liverpool fans that everyone should vote for Crown Paints. But when I started following football, Candy was the Liverpool sponsor.
Okay. And
I remember if I ever saw someone with a Crown Paints, a Liverpool shirt with Crown Paints on it, I don't know, I found it quite, it was like it was evil in some way. I don't know why. It was because it was the past, it was before I started being interested in football. It seemed a bit alien to me, the Crown Paints thing, so I wasn't proud of it. I didn't see it as an iconic Liverpool sponsor at the time when I was a kid. It was like the dark side was the Crown Paints shirt, which is a little bit odd.
Well, it does tie in, I think, what happened. And of course, one thing I must mention as well that I sort of discovered in recent years is that often, before sponsorship was allowed in games, quite a few clubs would wear it on tracksuits. So there's a great example of Bolton Wanderers would have, I think it was a drinks mate called Cambrian. I think they did soft drinks. And they had a wonderful logo with a graphic of a bottle and everything else on their tracksuit tops. But of course, they would be discarded before kickoff. So sponsorship was creeping in training wear before it was actually in match wear. And there's a few instances of that as well. But no, but going back to when it really began to take off with clubs, I think what used to annoy me was that people, and people still do it, they refer to that kit or that shirt as the Crown Paint shirt or the Candy shirt or the JVC shirt. And I kind of think, I used to get really annoyed about that. I'd be thinking, no, it's an Adidas shirt or it's an Umbro shirt. Don't use the sponsor as the defining feature. But of course, by default, that's sort of what happened, wasn't it? And that's why I think sponsorship is really important, because fans do really, it really kind of, I hate to say it, becomes almost bigger than the club identity in some way.
Well, because it literally is bigger. So yeah. The biggest thing you have on a football shirt is the central sponsor, yeah. Which now it seems absolutely perverse. Well, sorry, I can't imagine a time when it didn't seem perverse. So I can understand the FA saying, well, you can't have a sponsor because your crest is small and it's at the top of the shirt. So if you want to have a sponsor, that's fine, but just make sure it's smaller than the crest. So I think Udinese in the late 70s, maybe early 80s, had the name of their president was made ice cream or something.
Okay.
And his name was down the side of their shorts. So you would think it would creep in that way. So it be a very small logo, and then as rules are relaxed over time, then it gets bigger and bigger. But instead, they just went, well, there's a massive expanse of space on the front of the shirt. We're just going to put a huge logo on there. So immediately, the club's identity, it plays second fiddle to that, which...
Well, it does. That's,
no, that just seems odd to me, that would be allowed to happen overnight.
Well, it does play second fiddle to an extent, but I think that... Because I'll lay my cards on the table. I'm actually quite a big sponsorship fan. I think even, you know, being a designer as well, I'm all about words and colours and, you know, sort of there's a link there that I love seeing text on clothing as far as, you know, sportswear goes. It's just something odd about me, I guess. But I think it's really important then that the sponsors are relevant to the club. And I think when you look back to especially the early days, I think it's lovely to look back and see local newspapers, local businesses, local breweries actually, you know, supporting their local side. It's that sense of community again. And in that way, it doesn't kind of overshadow the club, but they're working with the club within the community. And I think that's a big deal. Do you know, it's... And I think we've lost that now, where we see multinationals and we see betting companies and Asian companies. And, you know, no disrespect to them at all, but it's hard for that link to be really made.
Leeds United, who... I think they won the last old league championship, didn't they? 1992. They had... And I think it was just for that one season. They had Yorkshire... Evening Post, was that the sponsor
right.
that season?
Took over from Top Man.
Yeah, so it was Top. So that kit had two sponsors. They wore that kit for two seasons, I think, didn't they? But it had Top Man the first season, and then Yorkshire Evening Post the season when they won the league.
That's right. Yeah,
it's an incredibly difficult shirt to find. That one. It's been reproduced since by probably Score Drawer, I think, but very, very hard to find the one with the Yorkshire Evening Post on the front. So. That's another thing, that sponsors will add value to the shirts as well.
Interesting. But of course...
If they're regarded as iconic.
Certainly. But I think even with the bigger companies at the time, and immediately there might not be an immediate link to the club, to the neutral, but actually if you lived in the area, you'd quite often find, and I'm trying to rack my brains for an example, you'd often find that their head office would be local. So there was nearly always some kind of direct correlation between club and sponsor. And I think that's why maybe there was a sense of community and kind of standing side by side. I mean, I know when I was doing all the legal clearances for True Colours for the books, I had to speak to every sponsor as well to get their permission to include their logos in the book, which is odd because you think, you know, they've put their logos out there into the world. Why can't anyone reproduce them? But, you know, that's just the way of things. But there were several people I spoke to, and I spoke to one of the guys, I don't know if he was the head guy, he must have been at Draper Tools, who sponsored Southampton. And he said to me, he emailed me and said it was brilliant. You know, I've always been a Southampton supporter, and I was so pleased to be able to have my company on my team shirts. And I had a similar response from Paul Withy Windows, who sponsored Norwich City in the mid-80s. And again, it was a real local business, a fan of the club. And it was such a buzz for him to be able to support the club in that way and to have that association with them. And they're quite, you know, they're quite, I know it's a commercial world and everything else, but they're quite powerful links, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. And for now, when they look at these teams, the amount of money in football, certainly if they used to sponsor a Premier League team, they must just chuckle to themselves that at one time they managed to get their logo on the front of their local team shirt, because now it's just ridiculous. With so many games being televised, the value of that contract to put your logo on the front of, say, Southampton, even Southampton's shirt is... Although, I wonder if Southampton sponsors, or certainly in recent seasons, actually are a local team. But they're
a dot-com
boom company or something. I'm not sure. But do they make video cameras or something?
Right.
I'm not sure. But they've managed to do it. And yeah, that's the compromise, I think, of having a logo on your shirt that seems to compromise the integrity of the club and say, okay, well, the crest is secondary to that. Obviously, the club's colours are important in that case, because the first thing you see is the colour of the shirt. So if that ties into history of the town, or the history of the football club, then that has prominence. But then the next thing you see is the sponsor. So as you say, people will identify shirts by listing the name of the sponsors.
Yeah, that's right.
So what period was it? You mentioned the tracksuits. So what years was that kind of thing happening?
I think it would probably be around... Maybe it was the sort of 76, 77 mark. I'll try and dig some examples out, and I'll give them to you later. Maybe you can put them up on Design Football. But certainly I've illustrated a few, because if you watch some old 70s football on YouTube, you'll quite often see, well, I say quite often, occasionally, you'll see the players, you know, discarding their tracksuit tops just before kickoff, and you'll glimpse the sponsor there. So they kind of, it's sort of like a stealth way of doing it. But of course, most people would only ever see that at the game itself. The Bolton one was a great example, but there are others. And it even led to some really interesting tracksuit tops where they didn't have full zips. You know, the zip would only go down so a half zip, I think it's called. So it wouldn't disrupt the logo. So it did happen. It's something I wasn't aware of until, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
If that brought about the half zip top, that would be absolutely fantastic.
I'm not claiming that, but it's a nice thought, though, isn't it? Yeah, it could be.
Well, yeah. Necessity is the mother of invention.
Exactly.
Regarding that sort of integration with the shirt, obviously we can't not mention, and I've mentioned before on this podcast, but the Talbot Coventry City kit. Is that something you've illustrated? I'm pretty sure it must be.
Definitely. I mean, they had the home and away, obviously, the blue and then the red one. But they also wore, of course, the classic story, and I'm sure many people will know this, is they, because, you know, TV broadcast of sponsored shirts wasn't allowed until 83. So clubs would always have to wear an unsponsored shirt when the games were shown on TV. And maybe that added to the mystique, because most fans, such as myself, would only see a game on TV. And then you'd see photos of another game, and you think, well, hang on a minute, they've got a big word on their shirt. And when they played the big match on Sunday, they didn't have it. So there was a bit of a mystery going on there. But... must have been about that. Yeah, 83 was when that was lifted, the TV ban. Do you know what, Joe? I've completely forgotten the question. What was your question now?
I was just talking about the integration of sponsor into shirt.
Oh, the Talbot one. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, the Talbot one. That shirt, for people who don't know, and I'd imagine most people do, the shirt has a huge sort of, it's like an isometric, it's like 3D shaped T that runs as part of the shirt design, and it also runs into the shorts, so the tee continues onto the shorts. It's fantastic. It's actually fantastic. And the best version, I saw one on a website recently, is the red version, because it's so rare, and to see one was fantastic. It looks great as well. That's a great shirt. But as you say, when this was banned from being worn in televised games, all sponsorship was. So I think, was it designed as a way of getting around that? So they would take Talbot off, the word Talbot would come off the shirt, but they would still have the big T as part of the kit.
I think that was the original plan, because you've got to remember at the time that Jimmy Hill was chairman, and he wanted to change the name of the club to Coventry Talbot. So he wanted to actually really embrace that that whole sponsorship, you know, commercial venture there. So I think that was the plan. And obviously the logo, the design of the kit was the T from the Talbot logo, the way it was rendered in this sort of, you know, as you say, isometric navy and white pattern. But of course, as I'm sure you know, the FA still it didn't wash with the FA. And what they tried to do by making the logo the integral part of the whole kit design, that was the aim, was to bypass that rule.
Yeah, and so as you say, that when games were televised, they wore a plain shirt. Was it blue shirt, white sleeves or something?
It wasn't a bad looking kit. It was just a standard sky blue with like white side panels running down each side with a little bit of navy trim. And the red mirrored the design, but in red. So that was their alternate kit they had to wear when they were ever there on TV.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And it's fascinating the reasons why you get these special kits. And in Europe, in the 90s, teams weren't allowed to have extra branding. So Umbro was the big one, where a lot of Umbro kits had either a diamond stripe thing, diamond strip down the sleeves. They weren't allowed that, so they had to edit kits slightly in European competition, or certain logos had to be removed. Barcelona had to remove Kappa logos from their shirts,
and Man United in, I think it was 1985, when they had the badge placed centrally on the shirt and they had an Adidas logo on each sleeve for European games, they couldn't have more than one Adidas logo on the shirt, so that design had to be altered as well.
Brilliant. I didn't even realise that it had gone back as far as that. So there was before the ban, I take it. This was the 84 or something, was it?
Yeah, it was 84, 85, I think, something like
84,
that.
84, 85, yeah. Mm. Okay, so where do you, just in general, where do you stand on football sponsorship? Good thing, bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, I do feel sad, as I mentioned earlier, I do feel sad that there's often not a direct kind of locality or even emotional link between the sponsor and the club. Mm. You know, but you've got to be realistic about that. But when you look at shirts today and you look at the amount of visual, I'd say the word clutter, I don't necessarily always mean it in a negative context, the amount of visual stuff that's on a shirt now. And yet the Premier League and the Football League still won't allow a second sponsor kind of on the front of the shirt. You know, obviously we've got the ones on the back now, not in the Premier League. But that seems odd to me, where you've got a Premier League sleeve badge. You often have, if there's a if it's a Poppy game, or for example, around Remembrance Day, you get these extra bits and bobs that are allowed on a shirt. And yet they won't start bending those rules to allow a second sponsor. I mean, it's valuable income for clubs. And I think, you know, I go against all the purists here. I love seeing these Belgian and Norwegian sides where they've got about 13 sponsors on the shirt. I think that's I quite like that. And I think there's, even done tastefully, there's spaces on the shirt where you could include a second sponsor or even a third sponsor, and it wouldn't be at the end of the world.
Yeah, there's various ideas for this. So, it is crazy for me that amateur football, it's so hard to get sponsorship to set up an amateur team. So we talk about grassroots football in this country. We talk about junior football and the development of bringing kids through. A starting point for that would be to get as many kids playing football as you possibly can. Mm. And the way of doing that is to have more kids teams. Mm. So every estate in every town should have a football club or several football clubs. Now, that's very difficult because people are obviously giving their time to it, and if they can't secure a decent amount of money from shirt sponsorship, they're going to have to actually dip into their own pocket as well. Mm. So that seems crazy to me. So if you allowed more logos on shirts in amateur football and junior football and so on, I think you'd see more money going into the game at that level. But for whatever reason, the FA bans it. I think currently you can have, I think it's maybe one on the shirt, one on the shorts. Mm-hmm. I think that might be it.
Really?
I don't know how much more than that.
Okay.
No, you're allowed one on the front of the shirt, one below the collar on the back, even in amateur football, and one on the shorts, I believe. Which still, and in fairness, people don't take that up, so you don't see many amateur teams with three sponsors on their kits when they could have.
Okay.
But there should be so much more scope.
Yeah.
You could have rules about the proportions of the shirt. So, for example, you look at a shirt and say, okay, well, it's a black or white striped shirt. It's 50% black, it's 50% white. You can have a sponsor's logo that takes up another 5% in a different colour, but then any other sponsors, you've got to keep the proportions of the colours the same. Obviously, companies don't like the colours of their logo being changed at times, but it's one way of getting around it. As you say, a lot of Scandinavian teams have a lot of sponsors. Sock sponsors have just come in Spain. I think there's special ties that go around the sock.
Yeah.
Is that a new direction that you'd like? Or
I think, and again, I'll probably get some stick for this. I think if there's a little, you know, if it's space there and it doesn't, you know, I don't mind that at all when it dominates the shirt, but I know it sounds really contradictory in a way, but I think, yeah, there's no problem with that. I think the biggest space is on the sleeves. I think, why should all these clubs wear a big, massive tournament sleeve patch on each sleeve that seems to be getting bigger and bigger, when that, to me, is a prime place for a discreet logo to go, or on the collar, you know, around the collar area, like they do in rugby, you know, have sponsors like that. I think you're looking at about three or four prime spaces. The sock one may be a bit of a novelty. I don't know how practical that would be. But even with short sponsorship, you know, when I've illustrated kits before and I look, and it can be quite hard work to actually find out who the sponsor is on the shorts, because you don't see them that big. Photos don't reproduce them. They're quite often not publicised as well on clubs' websites. So it's very much, if you pardon the pun, they get a bit of a bum deal out of it, you know? So I think you'd like that one. I think it's the same with sock, with sock sponsorship as well. It's maybe a little bit of a gimmick as far as that goes.
Yeah, what I've noticed is, I think most of the Spanish teams wear them, but Barcelona, Real Madrid, and I think maybe Valencia don't wear them either. It's in a colouring that might relate to the club, but it's a big block, and you can't notice what it is. I think they recently had Pro Evolution Soccer, but
that's right.
It's, you can't read it, but it does change the colour of the socks. So suddenly you're not wearing red socks anymore. You're wearing red socks with a massive white stripe with some writing on it. So I don't know if that. Yeah, well, it's not necessarily something that's listed when you say what are your colours for the referee for the game. And sock clashes are the most important clashes.
Yeah.
In the flow of the game, I would have thought.
Sure.
Or slightly after the overall clash. We'll say that for Dennis Hurley's benefit, because we know he cares deeply about that.
But you know, Jay, I think you've touched... That actually raises another issue that I've noticed. I don't know if you've picked up on this in recent years, is that back in the early days of sponsorship, a company would be quite happy for their logo to be reversed out in white, or, you know, whatever the colour of the shirt was, and to have the logo rendered in one colour. Whereas it seems more and more frequently now, we're seeing, and again, it sounds a bit sort of damning, but quite crude, kind of almost like transfer applied big white blocks with a colour logo on it, rather than having the logo really integrated into the shirt design. So I don't know if companies are getting more precious about their branding and saying we want to retain our corporate colours, or whether it's a cheaper way to put the logo on the shirt. But do you know what I mean? Especially with the lower leagues, you will see a big white block, bang, and the logo sits on there. And you think, you know, there's a much nicer way for that to work within the design.
I think there's a shift between the reasons for it in the top flights to the reasons for it in, say, non-league. So in the top flight, the reason will be, we've sat at a table and we've negotiated this deal, and this company is willing to pay us X if they can have their corporate colours on the logo,
right.
And then this other figure, which is much less, if we have to change them to our colours, so okay. it won't stand out as much, I would imagine.
Mm.
Lower down the divisions, the club probably never actually thinks to say, can you change your logo into our colours? They just go, oh yeah, we'll get it slapped on the front, just send over a PDF or something of whatever your logo is,
yeah.
and we'll get our printers to paint it to paste it on the front. Thanks for the cash. So that's quite sad. Yeah, it's a cheap way of doing it, and it's just people just unthinking.
But it's a necessity in a way. I mean, I've mentioned to you, my company, The Design Practice, we're sponsoring Aylesford Under Nines team this season, which is a massive buzz for me to have my logo on a team shirt, you know. But of course, they play in blue and white stripes, so we do have the necessity of having it on a white block. So when a logo is working with stripes or colour patterns, colourways like that, it is, you can understand that's how it has to be.
Well, obviously you've got an insight into it there. So what are the colours of your company's logo?
It's a green and sort of very dark grey.
And I don't think you ever considered, or was it a consideration of, do I want to change the colours of this logo because it'll fit better? Because you're in a unique position there where it's the advertising for your club, and you want to do something which is great for the kids and stuff. But also, you're a kit design aficionado. So... So was there a conflict?
I did think about it. It wasn't a conflict, but I had to think very hard because they wear an Adidas striped template teamwear shirt. So it had to, you know, the legibility wouldn't have been there. It had to go on a white panel, and that's fine. That's how it, although of course in the earlier days, teams would actually have their logos running vertically, like Grimsby Town and Sheffield United wearing stripes. They had their logos running vertically in the stripe, which doesn't always work. The biggest decision for me was whether to have the web address on there, and of course the purist in me said no, just the logo. But I thought, you know, my company's no Samsung, it's kind of good to have that web address in there as well. So that was the kind of compromise I had to make. But it's again, like these guys were saying about sponsoring Southampton and Norwich, it is really great to think, you know, my company, I bought a set of kits for these lads, and as you said earlier about getting these teams, allowing them to keep playing, that's a big deal.
I've just thought of something. The way around this rule is the lower back sponsor. So there's various different positions of sponsors you can have on a shirt. Now if you're allowed a short sponsor, I think when they say short sponsor, it's a square that's allowed lower down the leg, but you might be able to move it around.
Yeah,
if you have a sponsor at the very bottom of the shirt, that doubles up as a short sponsor, because if the shirt is tucked in, you see the sponsor on the back of the shorts, and if the shirt's hanging out, you see it at the bottom of the shirt, so it makes no difference. But I don't know what the FA would say to that, whether they'd say, oh, you've got too many sponsors on the shirt, because it immediately blocks out the one on the shorts. But that would assume that the FA has any sort of common sense, which I don't know that they do.
No, especially when you hear about all these rules and regulations about sponsorship, and then you'll see massive Cabrini or Kappa logos on shirts as well. And you think, well, that's as big as a sponsor logo. And just because they made the shirt, they're kind of, again, that's another little grey area that they're allowed to sort of bend the rules, I guess, a bit.
Very, very interesting that you bring that up, John, because there is someone called Tokyo Sexuale, which is a new story in itself.
Okay.
There is someone called Tokyo Sexuale, but he is going for the FIFA presidency, I believe.
Right.
And I think he's a South African guy. And he believes that international shirts should have sponsorship on them, as in a logo. So it was put to him, well, this is a crazy thing that you would bring in sponsorship. This would be a terrible thing for the game to bring about this change. And he said, well, the shirts, as you've just said, the shirts already have sponsorship on them, especially in the context of international teams. The kit manufacturer logo is sponsorship, because the international team does not go to a manufacturer and say, okay, we'd like X amount of shirts, we want to buy these shirts from you. It is always a sponsorship deal. It is always going to be the manufacturer that pays the international team, I would assume, for the right to produce their kit. So it's sponsorship. what do you feel about sponsorship logos coming into international shirts?
Well, it's really interesting, because one thing as a slight aside, you've got to remember that before manufacturers' logos were allowed on shirts, you can bet your life there was lots of people that didn't like to see them appearing. Because again, you're looking back to an era of clothing where, you know, clothing was quite plain. It didn't have logos. It didn't have words. So even it's the same kind of principle. People were unsettled by, you know, little Umbro logos appearing or Adidas or whatever. But now that's fully accepted. And I think that's really relevant with the international thing. I think from a, I don't know what they're trying to say. Are they refusing them because of a fact that the international game is not superior, but it has a different moral code to domestic games, or is it a visual clutter thing? Because obviously, you know, international shirts having numbers on the front of the shirts now, and again, massive tournament patches on each sleeve, that kind of loses that argument. I mean, I think I would have no problem whatsoever with seeing a sponsor on an international shirt. It wouldn't bother me in the slightest. I think it would be a good move.
I would like it. I think I'd like it as the watermark, or I'd like it as whited out. I think they could bring it in, but I still like the pretense that we don't have the sponsors, if that makes sense.
Why do you feel that, though?
Because I'm used to it, I'd imagine. I don't, again, like you, I don't know the reasons why it hasn't come in.
Mm.
But, I mean, it wasn't in Champions League finals. So,
no.
Maybe the first few Champions League finals, they weren't allowed to have the main sponsor across the front of the shirt. And even Liverpool, they weren't allowed to have the Adidas logos, I don't think, in one of the finals. The 84 final, they didn't have the Adidas logos on the shirt, is that wrong?
It was
taped
Umbro.
Over?
It was Umbro at the time, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Mm. And it was taped over, was it?
That's right. They had little, yes, because I think Adidas had intrinsic links with UEFA, I think that's what it was. There was. It's always been a bit of a grey area, because I think England as well, in the 82 World Cup finals, they had Admiral logos missing from their shirts. Although I since read that actually they were misled there, and they probably could have had Admiral logos on their shirts, but some kind of communication error meant they thought they had to take them off. But
I think it was the 1980 European Championships, and they did wear them in the 82 World Cup.
Oh, was it? Oh, right, okay. I knew it was one of those,
and
yeah.
Having more knowledge on something like that than John Devlin, I'm going to dine out on that for quite a while.
I told you I had a late night last night.
Yeah, excuses. So international shirts didn't have sponsors, or they don't have sponsors, and we'll wait to see whether they come in. There's been clubs that haven't as well. Barcelona didn't have sponsors for a long, long time, which seemed to be behind the times, and they gave their ethical reasons because no company was as important as the club itself and the colours of the club. And then very quickly, they went from having no sponsor to, oh, we'll just have a charity sponsor, and then we'll have a slightly different charity sponsor, which is maybe a little bit of a dubious charity in the Qatar Foundation. And then now they've just got an airline, I think. So
yeah. Well, that
what
kind
did
of
you feel about that?
Yeah, that kind of proves my point. Well, it certainly confirms my opinion of it. I think Barcelona are working towards what they consider to be a higher ideal, and I think that's what international football considers itself as well, that it's you know, it has higher moral values than domestic clubs. And of course, I think from what we've seen of, you know, the FIFA scandal of the last year, we know that possibly isn't correct. And I certainly think with Barcelona, and again, I hate being critical of kit design, but that always really puzzled me, because I think, okay, so they're taking a moral stance and saying we don't want to, you know, sully our shirts with an external sponsor, and yet they were happy to wear some absolute stinkers of designs where they had massive Kappa logos and some of the shirts they wore were just horrific, that really destroyed the identity of the club, and yet they wouldn't have a sponsor on them. And that is what I don't understand. That makes no sense to me.
Just as a small note on Barcelona shirts, one of the big problems they had with Kappa shirts in the 90s was there was too much white on them. So the whole Barcelona thing is we don't have white on our shirts because that's Real Madrid.
Yeah.
if you look at a Barcelona shirt now, and I haven't looked at the ones from this season, but previous, the last couple of seasons, Qatar Airways logo looks white, and you think, well, you're doing two things there. You're putting a commercial sponsor on the front of your shirt, and you're putting it in white, which you said you had a problem with as well. However, if you look very, very, very closely, it's a very light grey, which...
Really?
People... yeah, which I think is deliberate, which I quite like, that they've actually done that and said, all right, well, we'll accede to what the views of the fans will be a little bit here. Which okay. it's quite a nice thing, but if you look at it, it looks white. So it's, I don't know, I'm not really sure about Barcelona. The way around it is the island shirts, and still to this day, for the last 30 years or so, 25 years certainly, island shirts, obviously they're not allowed to wear a sponsor's logo on the front in matches, but the replica shirts have been sold with a sponsor's logo. So it was Opal, It's been O2 and Aircom.
Is it three Mobile for a while? Was that right?
Three Mobile, yeah. It's never been O2. I think the rugby was O2, was it?
Oh, possibly. I think it was three.
I think the rugby's O2. Yeah, three Mobile, the mobile company, yeah. They've had it on there as well. So they've sold the shirts like that. Something that someone put on Design Football once, because this is something that a lot of Ireland fans are not too keen on. They would prefer to own the shirt without the sponsor, because it's what the players wear.
That's the point, yeah.
Someone put on Design Football, got round it on Design Football by putting the sponsor's logo on the bottom of the back of the shirt,
okay,
which isn't as imposing as it is on the front, which is a quite a good idea.
Well, actually, and Jay as well, sorry, can you quickly butt in? In the 60s and early 70s, certainly with Umbro shirts, there was always an Umbro logo on the shirt, but it was printed generally upside down right at the bottom, where it was almost like an external label, where it was always tucked into the shorts, so it was never seen. But there was always a very subtle, very indiscreet bit of branding there as well. So it's a similar plan, I guess.
Yeah, I've got a reproduction of the 1970 Airtex England shirt, and it's got a printed Umbro logo at the bottom. I don't know how faithful that is to what it would have been at the time, but yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same principle. I don't know if it's upside down. Is that so the player can look down and be reminded of what he's actually wearing?
I'm not sure, but it's when I've seen with Shaking some of his match worn shirts, some of the really really old ones, you can see it on there then. So it was definitely, I don't know if it was on all of them, but it was definitely around at some point or other. But the island thing's quite interesting, because you're saying that the Irish fans, and I've heard this as well, is that they don't like having the sponsorship on the shirt. But again, as you say, is that purely because the team doesn't wear it that way?
I assume it would be, or maybe you don't want to be essentially carrying a sandwich board advertising a company. Maybe people do like to keep that to a minimum. You wouldn't think it, looking in the street and seeing how many people are wearing a massive Nike logo or a massive Adidas logo on the front of their t-shirt. But as you say, 40 years ago, that would have seemed insane to be wearing something like that.
Well, and that's what I've always found so exciting about sponsorship, whether it's manufacturer sponsor logo or, you know, an official sort of club sponsor, is that it has changed completely high street fashion as well. And it's now completely acceptable to have words running backwards, forwards, you know, even going down to things like band t-shirts. There's been periods where wearing music t-shirts has been so popular as well. And it does, people don't blink an eye about wearing, sponsoring beer or whatever it is, an Asian gambling betting organisation. It doesn't bother them. Or does it? I don't know. But isn't it funny how that almost becomes by the by?
That now no one ever thinks anything of it. Just on the subject of international shirts, the famous Denmark shirt, which is officially the fourth best football shirt ever in the Football Attics poll last year. It wasn't a poll. It was me deciding everything with you and the guys from Football Attics. there was no democracy about it. The Denmark shirt, so the Danish Dynamite shirt. on their squad photos before that World Cup, I don't know how long before, it actually had Carlsberg as a sponsor on the front. Okay. Have you seen that?
I haven't, no.
So that's something worth, I mean, those shirts must be worth an absolute fortune if you could get hold of one of those. So sometimes it can increase the value of a shirt because it's so rare. The replicas weren't sold with it, but the players wore it for the team shop, obviously as part of the deal with the sponsor. They also wore the special shorts with...
Right, the half and half shorts.
Yeah, the half and half shorts was like the opposite of the shirt. But yeah, I think it was in blue, the sponsor's logo, which worked quite well. But yeah, if you get hold of one of those shirts, that'd be fantastic.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When it comes to a sponsor, sometimes there is a conflict with some of the beliefs. So currently we have a lot of sponsors which are gambling companies, alcohol companies, payday loan companies. So a lot of terrible things that actually are a big deal for people based on their religious beliefs, religious belief, faith, and so on. So sometimes players will take it upon themselves to cover up logos. So Federico Canute, when he played for Sevilla a few years ago, they were sponsored by, I don't know if it was 888.com or it was a gambling website, and he covered up the logo. Is that something you've noticed or had thoughts about? Is it the right of a player to do something like that?
Well, it does. I do think about it quite a lot. And even going back to the 80s when you'd see like Holston on Spurs shirts and stuff like that. And the fact
or wooden, in fact.
Yes, because, you know, obviously junior shirts, you couldn't buy them. And I seem to remember there being choices whether you could buy sponsored shirts or not. That's my vague memory. That may be false. But I think there is a moral obligation there. And I think I haven't got the answer to it, but I think it's something that has to be considered, you know. And certainly even with youth teams, they don't have any alcohol sponsor on their shirts. Still, I think I've seen pictures of Celtics under, you know, under 16s or whatever, and they won't have Magnus Cider on the shirts. But I think in terms of players, I think, that's a difficult one. I don't think they do. I think if they sign to a club, they've got to sign by the contract and the rules and regulations that apply. And if the club have decided, rightly or wrongly, to go with a certain organisation, then, you know, if the players are that precious about it, then they maybe should think about signing for somebody else. I don't know. That's my gut feeling. Would you agree? What do you think?
I do agree with that, actually. I do agree with, if you sign for a club, then you go along with what they stand for.
What their values are.
So if their values are compromised to the extent that they will have, and even a bank, I think Liverpool, if you actually want to, I mean, I banks have money, so I don't want to be sued too badly, but it's worth having a quick Google on the internet of what Standard Chartered have been up to over the last few years, and to have them tied with Liverpool, and for them to have the audacity to tell Liverpool that they should be signing players from Asia, and to get angry with the way Liverpool handled Luis Suarez, that makes my blood boil when a sponsor thinks that they have that right.
Well, that's
because what you do is you go to the club, you decide, like a player, you decide whether the values are in line with yours, and then you go along with what they do. If you don't like it, you end the contract.
That's a very, very, very good point. I think, there needs to be some kind of, some looking at that and considering that. I mean, the payday loan companies, we've all got mixed opinions of what, I guess, what that's all about. I don't know how much clubs really pay attention to that. But, of course, you know, some other clubs really go out of their way to, you know, supporting the charities and stuff. I mean, Scunthorpe this season is a great example where they've waived their sponsorship and revenue and have the prostate cancer logos on the front of the shirt. And that's brilliant. You know, that's the opposite end of it, really, isn't it? The opposite end of that spectrum.
Yeah, the... And I'm always a little bit suspicious of that kind of thing.
Are you?
You could give the benefit of the doubt and say they're doing a good thing, but there is a PR exercise in that as well. So it's a great thing for a news story to come out to this club, as you've just mentioned, has waived their right to sponsorship money. So it advertises the brand. It shows the club in a good light.
Isn't that a win-win situation, though?
Oh, yeah, certainly. You're doing the right thing, and you're gaining a benefit from it as well. But it's just whether you want to do the right thing or you want to gain the benefit from something that sometimes the balance isn't quite there, I think.
Right, sure.
So regarding alcohol sponsorship on shirts, so that's banned for kids' shirts in this country. So replica shirts, I believe it's against the law for replica shirts to carry an alcohol sponsorship. But Celtic, for example, you can buy the adult shirts without the Magnus sponsors as well. And funnily enough, the Nike shirts, the unsponsored versions, are all sold out by about September, October. But New Balance have come in and they seem to have plenty of stock. So
right. Okay.
I don't know what that means for the future or whether they just are better planning for the season. But I know there's a sale on of Celtic kits at the minute. So,
but didn't we have this wonderful thing with Celtic? We talked about that anniversary shirt, the white shirt, recently.
Mm.
The fact that tenants agreed to reduce the size of their logo, so to retain the kind of integrity of the shirt, and they even had the logo kind of very very faint tonal, almost like a shadow print, wasn't it? Do you remember, under the badge?
Yeah,
and they did that across all kits, didn't they? I think that season.
Yeah, I think it was small across all kits, and it was... No, sorry, it was small on...
On the home and the third.
No, I've got that shirt. I think, yeah, the home and the third was small, and on third, it was whited out as well.
Yeah.
And there's a great article on this that could be found on Celtic Quick News.
Oh, okay.
And they talk about the benefit of a news story being related to the fact that you will gain a lot more from whiting out your sponsor than you would gain from it being seen by more people. More people would know, because if you sponsor a club for a long time, and this is probably one of the reasons why long-term sponsorships are relatively rare, is because it becomes part of the shirt to the extent that new people will not notice it. It would just be an integral part of a Manchester United shirt. And it's only a subconscious message that gets sent across, rather than someone looking at it and going, what's that company? I'm going to go and check them out, because everyone who would have done that has already done it 5 years ago when you first started sponsoring them.
And didn't Etihad do it for Man City? And I think GAC did it for Palace as well, when they both wore sashed kits. Yep. I think they both agreed to reduce their logo size, which is, again, it's being clever with sponsorship. And I think that's the key thing. And it's certainly far cleverer than just having a big white panel and, you know, not even compromising on reversing your logo out of a shirt. You know, that's the kind of clumsy way of doing it, the unsubtle way. But there are, as you're saying, there are better ways to get good branding and good PR.
We've kind of come full circle on this, because something about the miniaturising of the sponsors' logos, for Nike shirts, Inter Milan had it when they had that St. George's Cross shirt.
That's right, yeah.
Man City had it as well when they had the sash shirt. Like you say, in both cases, they put the sponsor's logo underneath the crest.
Yeah.
Now, that might be for aesthetics purposes, but something about Nike is that they have a certain area as part of contracts and how the Nike swoosh logo should be depicted. You're not allowed to have it. You're not allowed to encroach on it. So you can't have the sponsor's logo so close to it.
Okay.
So really, a sponsorship logo, if it's miniaturized, should go under the manufacturer's logo. But instead, because Nike have these rules, you couldn't do that. You have to put it under the crest instead.
But you're
compromising the club again.
Well, are you? I mean, all logos will have an exclusion zone. So they'll always say, you know, there'll always be a fixed area that you can't supposedly encroach on it. Mm. I think what that's... I see what you mean. I do understand what you're saying. But I think the relationship is between... Because the manufacturer's logo is on there to say, we made this shirt. But the relationship between sponsor and club, that's the intrinsic link. So to me, it kind of makes sense for them to be there. It's saying we're the club's partners, so we're with them. We're supporting them, if you like, underneath. So I can see a certain logic there. But I do know what you mean. You're kind of thinking purist identity on one half, commercial on the other, aren't you?
That's
that's that split. I mean, do you think, I wonder if, I don't think we ever will, but, you know, it's fun to think about it. I wonder if there'll ever be a time where sponsorship will always go small under the club badge. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Go back to a season where it was pure colour.
It's
a nice thought.
Yeah, it is a nice thought. I don't see that as the direction we're going in.
No.
I think we're going in the other direction, I think.
But I think, it's cleverer ways... surely in terms of branding and advertising and sponsorship, there's more interesting ways and effective ways to get the message across than just slap bang on the middle. And I think that's what clubs are exploring. I feel there's lots of contradictory messages I'm giving out here, but I sort of feel like my thoughts are quite clear on it. But I'm aware that sometimes I might sound like I'm contradicting something I said earlier. But, you know.
No. Just what we were talking about regarding the individual players having a problem with the shirt. Something I alluded to. So where I mentioned Spurs and Holston. In the 1987 FA Cup final, half of the team weren't wearing the Holston logo. Do you remember this?
That's right, yeah.
And it wasn't a problem. I don't think the referee had a problem with it. So I think in terms of the rules, different players can wear a different kit as long as they're wearing the right colours.
Okay.
I think, anyway. So you can have people wearing a different sponsor's logo. So you can bring in an individuality or a bespoke nature to the kits if need be. There was recently a Legends game, I think it was Malaysia, like Malaysia All-Stars against an international All-Stars. And on the international All-Stars team, they all had a graphic. I don't know if I've talked about this on this podcast before, but they had a graphic running down like as a central stripe, like a thin version of the Ajax stripe, let's say. Mm. And it was a graphic of their country on the international All-Stars kit. So each player had like their flag, let's say, down the middle of their shirt. But it was obviously a different flag for each player. It was a white shirt with a design down the middle that was different for each player. And there's not necessarily, I don't think, a reason why that can't be brought in. So, for example, you have in the programme, in the football programme, I don't know if it's the case anymore, but it used to be the case that each player had an individual sponsorship. Do you remember that?
Well, I used to sponsor a guy called Dave Martin at Southend United. I sponsored his socks. £15 it cost me.
Well, there you go. Well, you could feasibly...
I see where you're going, yeah.
...had the name, the design practice, let's say, on the sock of the player. And as long as it doesn't change the kit to an extent where it's not what has been listed...
I can see it, yeah.
Referee before the game. Why is that a problem?
Well, you know what? As you were saying that, I could see where you were going, and I was thinking then, obviously, player names and squad numbers, etc., coming on shirts, they're a big part of, especially with younger kids, of buying their hero shirts. You know, that's a big deal now. It wasn't when I was growing up with replica kits, but that's changed. Why can't these players either have, even if it's a charity they support or something, to really personalise... get their message across on the shirt as well. If it's all about player power now, I think that's a really interesting idea.
I wish I hadn't said it now.
I wish you hadn't said it because I was going to say it and then claim all the glory, but it's going to look like you thought of it.
I think I've just invented it, haven't I? I think this is going to happen.
Don't let this podcast go out, Jay. It's too good.
Yeah, I don't know. Can we sort of patent this? I'm not sure. Okay, something, an instance of this happening, and it's just a last point I want to make about it, is there was a football team in France, I think they're amateur or semi-professional, called Vizille. And Vizille is a great place, and you should Google Vizille because it's I go there quite often. I've got family who live there.
Okay.
And it's essentially where the French Revolution started from. It's a beautiful castle, beautiful grounds. And that's where, they had the first meetings and decided to march up to Paris or whatever. So it's great. But that's a great place. And there's a football team there. And their kit was made by a company called Zeus Sport. I think it's one word, Zeus Sport.
Well, as in the god?
As in the god.
Right, okay.
And I've read a couple of different versions of this story. And obviously, because they're a small club, the news on it isn't perfect. But they had either a Muslim manager or some of the players were Muslim. And they refused to wear the shirt because it had the word Zeus on it. And the logo for Zeus Sport is just the word Zeus.
Okay.
And it was like they were advertising another god or condoning people worshipping another god. And that was the problem.
Mm.
So I'm not sure where this went, but there was a problem with that. Now, the reason I bring that up is I had a little Google of Zeus Sport, and their kits are fantastic. If you go on, they're just a teamwear brand, but if you go onto their website, they have very, very inventive kits, and the best one is like an archery target kit, and it's absolutely fantastic. So I'll pop it on the notes anyway, so you'll be able to have a look. But when we see in this country so many boring teamwear companies that don't have any sort of real idea of creating something new, and a lot of them, I think they've paid for licenses. I hope they've paid for licenses. So they, one of their teamwear kits is very similar to an Adidas. I'm going to put them out of business now. I'm going to get them sued, I think. But it's very, very similar to a very, very specific Leon kit from a few years ago. But yeah, go and have a look. It's an interesting story anyway, but go and have a look at their teamwear kits because they are fantastic. I really, really like them.
But that's interesting. I can see that being but again, you're right back to, you know, how strong religious beliefs are. Because I guess there are mainly religious beliefs that stop these things happening.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it's like working on a Sunday though, isn't it? You know, that always used to be an issue. I don't know. It's a difficult one. Really difficult.
I think the way around it is the individual sponsorship deals. Mm. So some players could wear it. But this is the same thing with the poppy situation, when you say to a player, if you don't want to wear a poppy on your shirt, so James McLean doesn't wear a poppy, and I fully understand the reasons for it. And I don't think... My feeling on the poppy is that every player should be given a poppy shirt and not a poppy shirt, and you just put on whichever poppy shirt... Yeah, whichever shirt you want to wear, you wear the one with the poppy or you wear it without, because it's the same as every Remembrance Day. We wake up in the morning and we go, well, am I going to put a poppy on or am I not? So
I'm a massive, it sounds really naff to say it, I'm a massive fan of the poppy and what it means, what it stands for, and I've always worn one, but I do feel uncomfortable with the emotional blackmail that everybody feels now to wear one. I think it should be, if you've got the, I wouldn't say the word soul to wear it, if you've got the, whatever your reasons are for not wearing it or wearing it, that's up to the individual. That's my view.
Well, it's almost devalues the wearing of it if people are being forced to wear it in the first place.
Exactly.
And one of the things that we're remembering is standing up against fascism, you would think. So... quite an important point when it comes to whether or not you should be made to wear poppy.
I do see that. I do see that.
So that is kit sponsorship, I think, more or less rounded up. Did you have any other views on that you wanted to get across?
It's fun. It's worth digging in, and maybe I'll do another blog on it as well, but it is fun looking into people that maybe aren't aware of individual stories. There's some brilliant sponsorship stories over the years. You know, West Brom with their no smoking sign sponsorship, and even when local councils, Millwall, Lewisham Borough Council sponsoring Millwall, should a council be allowed to spend taxpayers' money on sponsoring a football team? There's some wonderful little stories and anecdotes around. So I think anyone that's interested in that, I'll try and write something on it, but have a little delve around, because there's plenty of, you know, good reasons for and against shirt sponsorship, but it's all interesting stuff.
Just a couple of other things that I've seen in the news this week. You might have seen it yourself, John. Did you see the little boy, or I think he's in Iraq, wearing a carrier bag with Messi's name written on it? Have you seen this?
I saw a brief mention of it, but I've not followed the story. What's happened?
Well, so a picture's been taken. I don't know if they've managed to identify the kid or not. And then there's the story that Messi wants to contact him to send him a real version of the shirt. So what he's done is he's taken a blue and white carrier bag and he's essentially got in it, ripped out the bottom, got in it, tied the handles over his shoulders. So he's got a DIY Argentina shirt, and he's written Messi 10 on the back of it.
I've just seen it now as we're speaking. Yeah, yeah.
So this is incredibly cute, I suppose, and it's sad, and it's a sad indictment of the world that he's done this. I actually think just fast-track him on a fashion design course, because that's just brilliant, isn't it? That he's come up with that. So if they find him, obviously help his family, because he's poor and he's probably living in pretty destitute environment. But the inventiveness is quite exciting, I think.
Do you know what? It reminds me of a guy. I did a little thing with a guy, a filmmaker, a few years back on a documentary about a sportswear brand, which hasn't come out yet, but hopefully it will. And he's also worked in fashion before. And he said, again, in African countries, you know, when people donate clothes, there was a real spate at one point of loads and loads of all these kids wearing football shirts, because it was old football shirts. People were chucking them out, didn't appreciate any value of them. And they were ending up in third world countries. It's, you know, it's an odd thing, isn't it, to see these brands and logos again in a country where, you know, it kind of jars in a way.
Yeah, it's how far these things reach. So we have a game of football which has so much money in it, but it spreads worldwide to people who live in something which is so massively alien to the way the sort of Western approach of football is. So,
it is a great example. It'd be interesting to see what Messi's kind of, you know, how this story pans out. I think, again, it shows that there's an immense possibility for football to do real good, and for football sponsorship to do real good as well. And that's what needs to be encouraged, I think. But it is a wonderful story.
Yeah. There's a great need for capitalism to do more good in general, I think. But that's for another day. That's for another type of
another
podcast.
Another 4-hour podcast, that one.
staying on, sort of linking slightly in with Lionel Messi. This week, Barcelona's shirts were supposedly leaked by it's the usual paper in Spain that leaks these kits. They're wrong. There are elements to them that are correct, I think, but they, generally speaking, they're wrong. And one of them, the third shirt, has been lifted, or it's been lifted, let's call it that. It's been lifted from designfootball.com. One of the fantasy designers has put on designfootball.com. So the
Not
purple
again,
third
surely.
Kit.
Goodness. Okay.
Yes, it happens quite often, but they're usually the reliable source. I think it's Sport magazine, maybe, but I'll check it. And so they've said that this is the new this is the new shirt, and it's not the new shirt. It's just a fantasy design. So this happens from time to time, and it's happened again. But don't trust those leaked images. The colours are probably okay, but the designs are a little way off.
But you can see on that, I'm looking at those leaked designs now. Again, it's a real prime example of how a sponsorship logo can sit quite nicely in one of those sleeves. Tournament patch on one sleeve, sponsor logo on the other.
Yeah, they've been doing that in Spain for a while, I think.
It's the way forward, I think, Jay.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what form the next Premier League patch takes, because they're getting rid of the lion, I think. This is the thing. The lion logo is being removed from the Premier League. I don't know if they're going to take it off the trophy as well. I don't know. They don't like that. They can't be taken off the trophy, surely not. But it's coming off. So it'll come off the patch. So there'll be new patches next season, I presume. So we'll see what it is. But it is sponsorship because the Premier League is sponsored by something. So it used to have Barclaycard on the patches. Mm. I think it had... Do the current ones have Barclays on them? I don't know. But it's... They have had at some point, I think. They've maybe had Barclays on there as well.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see what that takes. But it is branded of some description, which is the same as sponsorship.
Yeah,
so we'll see what that form takes. The Premier League lion, so it's a lion with his foot on the ball.
That's right.
Which maybe, I don't know if it's part of the FA logo as well, maybe. They've got little statues in the Big Brother house at the minute, which are that, the lions with a foot on the ball.
Really?
I don't know why. I noticed that the other day when I was watching that.
Sit them in there somewhere. There's a few leaked shirts coming out, actually. I've noticed that this week. There's a few more popping up, but I do my best to avoid them until official launch. I always think they always look a bit grubby, don't they, when they're leaked beforehand, but I don't know.
They do, and I don't know what I prefer. I want them to be shown the way that Nike and Adidas want to show them, so I want the big launch.
Yeah.
But then I think they're going to look great on the publicity images. Then they're going to look slightly less great when the players are wearing them because they're wearing them in the wrong size or they won't wear them the way that we're intended. And then I'm going to buy it and then I'm going to put it on. And that's not good. So the leak is the best way of saying it. Seeing it is in its worst form is the most... It's the closest to what it's going to look like when I put it on.
I can see where you're coming from. I think, though, personally, I think that a shirt never looks better until I see it in action, until they see it worn. The promo images that come out now, I just make me curl my toes. I think I'd like to see the old days where you just get two players in the stadium, hands behind their backs, just posing for the kid. That's what I like. I don't like all this smoke and lasers and what have you. It always seems a bit over the top, but there you go.
One of the teams in Scotland, and I maybe shouldn't say it because I can't remember who it is, but it might be Air United.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure it's Air United. They don't actually, as part of their launch, I don't think that they show the shirt. They paint the shirt design on a naked woman. So good for them. Great guys.
No comment on that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay, so that has been great, John. Thank you so much for coming on for the second time. You're the first person to come on this podcast twice. A massive honour for you, I'm sure.
I am honoured. But you know what, Jay? I love it. I love doing them. I'll say do them every week, but then I might have to. But I'd like to do it more often if I'm invited. So yeah, always a real pleasure.
I have to take your first answer there, I'm afraid, John. So I'll speak to you next week.
Great, I'll tell the wife.
Yeah, the wife. this has been great. If you want to speak to John, it's True Colours Kits on Twitter. Also go and check out his website, which is truecolorsfootballkits.com. Loads of stuff on there. You need to get the books. If you don't have the books, buy the books. Somehow you need to get hold of these books because they cover kits from in England and international, let's say home nations kits from the last 40 years. 1980 onwards, is that right,
yeah,
John? 1980 onwards. So you've got to get those books. And then to fill in the gaps of recent seasons, you can go onto John's website where you can find galleries from the last few years and little rarities on there as well. Like John's Facebook page, you can probably find that as well. True Colours, again, True Colours Football Kits on Facebook, I think. There's a gallery of kits in there as well, which is brilliant. So do all that.
And also have a look at the design practice on Twitter as well. This is almost shirt sponsorship in podcast form, isn't it? But you'll see, hopefully, some images very soon of the Aylesford Under 9 shirts that my company is sponsoring. So, yeah, keep an eye open for that as well.
Check that out as well. So thank you so much, John. For Design Football, designfootball.com is the website. Look through the galleries. There's competitions. I think there's a weekly crest competition going on at the minute. So that's a fun thing that's happening. That's good. The Crest we don't talk about enough, but we will do that. We'll cover that in a future podcast. Go to the website, designfootball.com. Go to the Facebook page, which is designfootball.com. Also, contact us on Twitter if you want to, Design Football. If you want to speak to me specifically, that's fine as well. I'm J29ers on Twitter. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Please let us know what you'd like us to talk about on the podcast, what you feel about the podcast, even if it's abuse. I like abuse. I'm a masochist in that way, so that's fine. Thanks very much for listening. We'll speak to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.